Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, April 27th, 2016. Wendy Wilson will be here in just a few short minutes. We're going to first do the market report, and gold was up a few bucks most of the day. There is a weaker dollar waiting for the Fed to come out and give us their little song and pony dance or whatever you want to call it. But right now, gold is up 260 for gold at 1246. We had a high of 1254. Right now, 1246.90 for gold. Silver's up 8 at $17.31. Platinum is up 13 at 1030. Palladium is up 7 at $615. The USDX today, down 0.03 at 94.48. Crude oil's up another 1.27 at 45.31. Paper markets, again, enjoyed her lack of comments, I suppose. From Janet Yellen, we have the Dow up 51 points at 18,041. The NASDAQ was down 25 at 48.63, with the S&P up 3, 2,095. 10-year yield, 186, a little pressure on that, 0.09 to the downside. Euro is carrying 113, up 0.14. And we'll keep the opening short today as we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hi, good afternoon, Melody. Is Al with you?
Yes, yeah. I am.
Well, hey, how are you there, Al?
Did you think I'd been beamed up by the space aliens or something?
Oh, anything's possible this day and age. Nothing that surprised me. Well, I thought we'd talk about why science is wrong, especially when it comes to the scientific journals. A few people would think, to challenge any of the scientific journals today, because this is published data. This is prestigious. It has to be correct, right? Well, there's people investigating these journal articles. Now, these are the articles your doctors read and act on regarding patient care and treatment recommendations. So, but it doesn't surprise me that scientists aren't investigating a lot of these journal articles, but investigative writers are. Pascal Gobry, he's a Paris writer specializing in ethics and public policy reporting. He's written a couple of articles for Forbes, The Atlantic, Commentary Magazine, The Federalist, and so on. But he pointed me to a story by a California software engineer and also an author and writer, William Wilson, no relation to me, by the way. And in Wilson's article, it appears in the 2016 issue of Scientific Regress, and he states, the problem with science is that so much of it simply isn't science, end of quote. So he's reporting that the research in their articles, in the journal articles, he says their studies should be easily duplicated to confirm their results. So the problem is many of them are fraudulent from start to finish. And according to Wilson, experiments from prestigious journals in various fields make scientific claims, they ought to be verified before they're published. However, if you're reconducting these experiments under nearly identical conditions, they should yield the same results. And if no one is systematically checking, to see if they can verify the claims, then all these lies are becoming scientific truth, he says. And he says that's exactly what's happening. So he says, for instance, in the field of psychology, the reports there in the journals are 65%, have a 65% failure rate. And he says it gets worse in the medical research area. For instance, he says there's this unspoken rule in the pharmaceutical industry that 50% of all the academic biomedical research will ultimately prove false. 50%.
Well, you have a certain amount of prestige that's associated with science in general and with these journals in particular.
Yep.
But the truth of the matter, science is constantly in a state of correcting itself and correcting itself and correcting itself. It's only rarely that anyone produces anything in science that stands up for a lengthy period of time.
Okay.
New science is constantly replacing old science, and maybe we have to take it all with a grain of salt.
Well, for instance, if you look in your oncology area of cancer, your chemotherapy has 100% mortality rate. They already know that. Doctors know that. They'll even admit it sometimes to patients, but this is the only thing we have to treat you with. So, but that got approved. You know, that got approved as, you know, having some sort of benefit. Because when we look at these drug discovery projects, such as the ones that deal with cancer research, there's researchers now from Bayer. They found 75% of the published studies could not be verified with study duplication. So when the cancer studies are read by oncologists in the journals of Science, Nature, and Cell, now, these are prestigious journals, but they're producing fraudulent studies that can't be verified. So cancer patients need to think about that when they talk to their doctors, their oncologists, whether they've been influenced by bogus scientific research and the recommended treatments. So I don't have a problem calling this quackery, but Wilson says it this way. He says, we're drowning in bad studies. That's bad.
You know what? What crosses my mind are these magazines interested in publishing the truth? Because this goes to the editors of the magazine.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Meaning that they would find good scientists to write these articles, or are they looking for good writers?
Well,
if you catch my drift, they want articles that are easy to read and popular with the public, or at least with their subscribers, or do they want the truth from scientists who might not be particularly adept at writing, but nevertheless they're good at gathering truth?
Yeah, Wilson gets into that, all of that, actually. The Bayer research folks think that all this bogus research could be the reason why there's a reduction in the availability of new drugs and why so many drugs on the market are failing. I think it's worse than that. I think a lot of these drugs are killing people. And by the time, you know, it goes to courts and there's lawsuits, you know, the drug companies have made more than enough to compensate for paying any kind of legal, fines. But basically, according to now John Leonis, now he's a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, he says, the accuracy in which an experiment can be determined truth or falsehood is about 50% at best. And Leonis says, the ability to control a scientific setting in all these fields of medicine, he says, isn't very favorable. And to be supported by real statistical evidence, He puts it this way. A majority of the studies have a 50% chance of being truthful, but it would require unimaginable accuracy on the side of the scientists. That's an incredible statement.
Well, it sounds just like economics. Nobody knows what's really going on there either. I mean, the people in control, they don't know what's going on. They're, well, let's try this. I mean, it's just an article. Let's try this. We'll try what negative interest rates. We haven't done that yet. This is like a doctor saying, hey, let's try the stuff in the green jar. We'll give them a shot of that and see if that helps.
Oh, my gosh. You know, science in general has this rule in research. It goes by this 1 in 20 is an acceptable rate for false positives. So this measurement would lead the scientific fields to accept false hypotheses as true a minimum of at least 5% of the time. And then you get this snowball effect where a false is considered true, and then the future studies working off that false assumption, and then their results are supposed to be true, so it generates more false data speculated to be true. And, you know, even if a scientist catches this along the way, discovers the discrepancy, there's really no glory, grant funding, or tenure with research that is failing or false. So drug companies run into this paradox all the time. They've spent millions of money researching cost of the new drug, and they're losing millions a day waiting for the FDA to approve it. So the stakes are pretty high. And so, you know, saying something's good when it's not, you know, it's just it's going to pay off in the end. A good example, Hollywood did a take on that. It was called The Fugitive with Harrison Ford, where he played a doctor, and there he was involved in some fictitious medication called Provazic that was supposedly producing liver damage, and it was being covered up. So who's imitating who is a good question, but. The publication world, getting back to your question, very competitive, especially in the scientific journal area, and they're not exempt from publishing the latest and greatest in their industry. And if the chances are any given hypothesis is going to be false and producing no real findings, you have to conclude that, you know, failed research is being written up the majority of the time as being truth so they can publish something and sell it to their subscribers, as you were saying. So
they're looking for something sensational rather than truth. And they're saying, oh, we've got something here. Mushrooms.
Yeah.
All right. We've extracted some stuff from mushrooms that will cure cancer.
Right.
Well, this is sensationalism rather than science.
Or, you know, something from jellyfish, you know, will help your brain.
What goes good with jellyfish is peanut butter, but go ahead.
Well, a little fudging, though, in the scientific world is going to mean the difference between life and death down the road. So how much of it is accidental human error, how much of it is intentional fraud is what these investigative writers have been finding out. And what they say is that most of it has become intentional fraud. Therefore, dishonest people can manufacture any result they want because the raw data is never revealed or reanalyzed. So even if the raw data was available, who's going to take the time to sift through it all? Sort of like, you know, showing up to your closing at your house and you're going to sit there and read all the documents before you sign the line and get your key. So I don't really give too much credit then to the peer review process, because that's supposed to be a catch-all for this. And apparently, you know, bad news is on a trial data showing no findings to support the hypothesis. Well, that gets the messenger shot in this industry, basically. So the peer review people are going to shut their mouths because they're intimidated to do so. And then you would think, well, here's the seasoned researchers, Al. You know, what's with them? Don't they think twice about signing on as senior authors to some of this stuff? Because they're lending the credibility of their prestigious name to the study. And, of course, people in the study want it because it gives the study credibility and they can get the funding. But the more you read about what they find is it looks like a good old boys club. The senior authors have a lot of control over editorial and advisory boards of journal publications and universities where the government drops most of its funding. So no wonder the editors of journals are publishing junk. Think about it.
Where do we find the truth?
Well, Wilson boils it down to this. Science isn't immune to human elements of its enterprise, which are incompetence, fraud, selfishness, prejudice, greed, and human error. So it makes science vulnerable, he says, to becoming nothing more than a cult and their research being entered into the Library of Babel. Interesting comment.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. But, I mean, we are surrounded by that. And part of the reason, I think, is because we have so much information. There's so much flying around that who can say what's true and what's false? And it's a problem. There was a time 50 years ago, they didn't have this much research. They didn't have this volume. There was not a haystack of research. And when you get that, who can duplicate? Who has time to duplicate somebody else's research? Find out if he knows what he's talking about.
Right. Well, and, you know, I tell people, do your homework on everything that's recommended that you do as far as treatments. Always ask if it's going to make you stronger or more dependent and weak. I think we should be wise and have discernment on this and judge everything, because otherwise, why would you need to ask God for wisdom and discernment? You know, otherwise, it's sort of like going about your healthcare as pin the tail on the donkey. So I'm like, I always ask a lot of questions, and sometimes I irritate doctors when I ask a lot of questions. It's just like, you know, trying to talk to the government. You know, they just don't want to volunteer information. But, you know, God said herbs are here for the healing of the nations and for the service of man. And unlike the scientists in these studies, God cannot lie. So I guess it comes down to, who do you believe, science or creation?
I think you're getting to a point here where you have to, you have to consider, maybe you have to go back and look at what has worked for the past 50 years, 100 years, 1,000 years. Do we know things that have actually worked for a long period of time, and can we rely on those things? Or are the new medicines, are they whiz-bang and so much better and faster and stronger that we've got to go with whatever came out just this last week?
Well, I think a lot of it is people are just really want instantaneous results. It used to be these herbs for serious infections and illnesses. They did work, but you had to work with them. Sometimes you would have to convalesce for, like, say, a month, and people just can't afford to do that. So the trade-off is, you know, toxic chemicals. And, you know, in the long run, it doesn't do you any favors. So I think, we have to weigh, you know, the benefits and the costs, using that wisdom and discernment, and see what we're going to do.
And there's one other point. The kind of research that we're talking about in these journals, they are going to deal with treating symptoms.
Right.
Established disease. And if we can't rely on this, it implies that what we have to look for is we try to educate ourselves on how to prevent the disease rather than deal with it after we've got it. If you see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, prevention, pound, you know, the cure, you know, pound of prevention, you know, a little bit of prevention is a pound of cure. As the old saying, it is so true. Grandma was right. Chicken noodle soup had garlic in it. It was broad spectrum for viruses and colds and flu bugs. So, yeah, that's why chicken noodle soup helped you feel better. Yeah, a lot of these old things work, and it's got a long track record. And if people would like to learn more, we do have a free product catalog. They can call us toll-free to get one, 866-229-3663, or they can visit our website, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you. Appreciate the information. Apparently, that's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. And I'm learning for the first time that the real effectiveness of chicken soup is garlic. So perhaps they should have called it garlic soup, but nobody would want to take that. They would say, chicken soup, yeah, I'm not feeling very good, but I'll take some chicken soup. No garlic soup, thanks very much. We're going to take a break, get a couple of commercials. Wendy and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
Can Trump beat Hillary?
Well,
what do you think? Looks like that's pretty much after last night's primaries. It looks like maybe that's what might come out of the convention if he gets his points and she gets hers.
I think he deserves to win. And I've got an article here from Politico Playbook, and the headline is 82 days to Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland, Trump likely to clinch. It says last night, after winning each of five Arcella primary states by 29 or more points, Donald Trump said, "As far as I'm concerned, it's over. I consider myself the presumptive nominee." Absolutely. He's right. Next week's Indiana primary will be Ted Cruz's last stand. Do the pundits will try to infuse that primary with melodrama and cosmic significance? Good luck. Trump won Connecticut by 29 points, Delaware by 40 points, Maryland by 31, Pennsylvania by 35, Rhode Island by 39. I think the voters are trying to tell us something. And here's another part of the, there's more from Politico. It says a Republican insider laments that even with conservative calculations, he now predicts that Trump will cross the magic number of 1,237 delegates to win on the first ballot at Cleveland. I hope he does. The dominoes are falling and you can't stop them. Kasich staying in the race was an in-kind contribution to Trump. It blocked Cruz from ever getting his one-on-one shot. All right? Now, that's interesting, because Kasich and Cruz were trying to work together to sandbag Trump, and it turns out that maybe keeping Kasich around ultimately stopped Cruz, who was the only one who had a shot at defeating Trump. It may have blocked him from actually succeeding. You know, in order to solve problems, and part of this goes to Trump's sometime stupidity, his off-the-cuff remarks, gets him into trouble and the rest of it, but he's at least trying to be honest. And I think that's one of the things that draws people to him. In order to solve problems, businessmen have to tell the truth, at least to themselves. They have to have the courage to see and solve problems, because if they don't, the problems will destroy their business and leave the businessman broke. Businessmen don't have, I'm not arguing they have to be ethical or moral, but they have to be objective and honest and capable of dealing with reality. When politicians confront problems, they get paid regardless of whether the problem is solved or not. Their object is not to solve problems, but to get reelected. Therefore, politicians' primary objective is to avoid antagonizing any special interest groups that are likely to vote for or against the politicians. Now, how do politicians confront problems, which typically represent conflicts between two special interest groups? How do they do that without offending either special interest? They lie, all right? They refuse to admit the truth. They try to blame some insignificant third party or promise to get free money from the government to paper over the problem without holding either of the special interests responsible. And what I'm trying to get to is politicians have a natural tendency to lie more so than businessmen. They get to high positions of high political power based in large measure on their ability to lie convincingly. And I'm not arguing that businessmen are always honest, but they've got to be honest at least with themselves if they're going to succeed. They've got to deal with reality. Politicians don't have to deal with the same reality as businessmen. When you watch President Obama speak, or you see Ted Cruz speak, do you get the impression that either one of them is trying to tell the truth? Or do you see the gears grinding in their head as they try to answer every question in a way that might not tell the truth but will definitely not offend any significant special interest group? There's always calculation. I don't see calculation with Trump. Trump is a businessman. He's been plugged into reality for most of his life. Whenever he failed to see or admit the truth, he lost money and maybe even had to file bankruptcy. Trump has been conditioned by his life experience to call a spade a spade. He's not politically correct precisely because he's not a good liar. I'm not arguing he never lie. I'm not arguing he's moral, ethical, any of that. I'm just saying it's not his nature as a businessman to tell lies the same way you do as a politician. From the way Trump comes off, he sounds like he's almost compulsive about saying whatever it is that he thinks is true. As a result, he says some very stupid things. But the public doesn't seem to mind because they understand that right or wrong, Trump is trying to tell the truth as he sees it. And it's been a long time since we've had a candidate for high office that impressed the American people with the idea that he was determined to try to tell the truth. And he was not simply calculating every statement. Again, I'm not saying businessmen in general or Trump in particular are ethical or moral. I'm just saying that business takes place in the real world and thereby forces businessmen to face and deal with truth or go broke. I'm not saying that I will like everything Trump will do if he's elected president, but I am saying that it will be a refreshing change to have someone in office who is, one, not prone to lie, and two, not prone to commit treason and help destroy this country. Trump deserves to win in November. He deserves to win the election, if only because he's injected an element of honesty into the primary election that has shocked the Republican establishment and electrified the American people. Trump should be rewarded with a victory in November, if only to show future generations of political candidates that they can be elected even if they're not pathological liars. All right, we can elect Trump. He's an honest or semi-honest man, or it comes off trying to be honest, and it might turn out to be a disastrous presidency. Well, still, he's setting an example for whoever's running 4 years later, and people are going to realize, you know, the public likes honesty. We haven't had it for so long that we want it. We're hungry for it. Trump's delivering on that for that reason, to my mind. He deserves to win. And certainly Hillary. I mean, I with the offenses that she's alleged to have committed and been involved in, and everything about her, right? What part of her seems ethical, honest, moral? Is there anything there, or is she just sharp and shrewd and shifty? God help this country if we elect Hillary. And not just on the basis of whether she's competent to be president or not, but is she morally competent to be the leader of this country and or the free world? Is that something? Is that something that anyone can argue? I mean, she's cut from the same cloth as Ted Cruz and Barack Obama and George Bush, hustlers and conners and Bill Clinton. Trump's not cut from that cloth. And all by itself, that's a reason to think seriously about electing him. So who are you voting for, Melody?
It's private.
Private.
It's private.
Well,
it still amazes me that Hillary has gotten this far, because you're right. I mean, with everything that has clung to her, whether she did or didn't, even if you took 10% of what she's been accused of over the years, it's normally, if someone had had her type of record, she wouldn't even made the announcement of a candidacy. Because there was just... And here she
shameless.
Is.
Just shameless.
And here
doesn't matter
she,
what
is.
She is. Everybody yeah. knows what she is, and she doesn't care. She's running for president.
And nobody, it's not even
shameless.
Just that she doesn't care. Nobody else does either.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem.
And it's, so, it signals something about this country that's not good. We have to regain some semblance of ethics in this country. And there's some things that we just should say, look, we're not going to elect a crook to office. We had Nixon back in office back in the day, and at one point he said, your president is not a crook. Hillary doesn't even, in a sense, deny it. She just ignores the allegations, the implications, the inferences, whatever. She just goes on and does whatever it is she thinks she's going to do. And a significant portion of the public just says, yay, Hillary.
Well, she even got, I can't remember her exact position during Nixon, but she was kicked off the, when she was an attorney, she got kicked off the, I don't know, because they needed somebody honest on there. They were telling her then that she was dishonest.
Yep.
And I can't remember exactly her title role and so forth off the cuff, but
she was involved. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but she was involved in the defense of the Black Panthers, if I recall correctly, and I might not. And that may not be the legal situation
the
you're talking
thinking.
About.
No,
I didn't think it was, but
no.
It just
but still, me. I mean, back then she was viewed as being dishonest.
No.
So it truly does, it has baffled me that she has gotten this far, which takes the question off the table. There's a possibility she might very well be president.
Yeah, no. I understand. And you know how we could guarantee Obama could guarantee her election? All he has to do is pass an executive order that lets all the convicted criminals vote, because they'd all be in favor of Hillary. You know, we'd have all the former convicted felons. We could have recruiting drives, voter registration drives right there in the slammer. What do you think, Melody?
No,
idea whose time has come?
Maybe. I think the time has come to... What else we got?
We got the Greek, the never-ending story. Here's an article from Reuters. The headline is Eurozone, more time needed for Greek reform. Tsipras to seek EU summit. They've been at this for 6 years. They understand that, they need more time. The article says Eurozone finance ministers will not meet on Thursday and need more time to discuss Greek reforms that would unlock new loans, signaling significant differences remain between Athens and its lenders on bailout targets. Oh, my God. You know, this is one of those things, signaling different, significant differences. Monk, what they're signaling is in this never-ending story is that Greece will never be both willing and able to repay its debts. What they're signaling is that the European Union creditors refuse to face reality. Greece is broke. It's bankrupt. Greece should be allowed to file for bankruptcy. The Greek debt should be written off, and Greece should be allowed to rebuild its economy if they care to, without more European Union loans, without more IMF loans, and without existing IMF debt obligations. What they're signaling is the creditors refuse to admit that what can't be paid won't be paid. They're dragging this on 6 years. The meeting was a possibility because Athens and its European Union and IMF lenders aimed to reach an agreement this week on reforms needed to conclude a key review of the country's bailout progress that would unlock funds under a multi-million euro bailout package it signed up in July. Okay, we're trying to get the money. The Greeks are playing along. They want more free money. Come on, lend us some more money. That's what the Greeks are saying. The creditors are saying, you got to pay us some of what you already owe us. And you need to make reforms so you can. Greece is not eager to make the reforms. The creditors are not eager to write off the debt, and so they sit there glaring at each other. The creditors are predators, in my opinion. They're trying to hustle Greece into assuming that, for example, Greece and its creditors agreed on a package of reforms worth 3% of Greece's economic output. They want 3% of whatever Greece generates, its GDP, is supposed to go to these creditors. All right? And Greece doesn't want to do that. I don't know if they can do it. They certainly don't want to do it. But they disagreed on contingent measures to be implemented only if needed to make sure that the country reaches its agreed fiscal targets in 2018. They, look, you know, this is just one of those things. You sit there and you laugh at it. And again, from my perspective, Greece and its creditors and the IMF, they deserve each other. The creditors are predators. They're trying to say, you need to agree to go into bondage and be our little serfs and servants. And the Greeks are parasites. They say, you need to agree to give us more free money. They're both trying to exploit each other. Creditors want Greece to agree to be their debtor servants. Greeks want more free loans that they'll never repay. It's a lose-lose relationship, where both sides, refusing to lose anything more, will ultimately lose a lot. From my perspective, a pox on both their houses. I say let the creditors admit they were stupid to lend all that money to Greece in the first place. They should have known, you know, it's like giving beer to a teenage kid in a car. All right, look, teenagers can't drive drunk. And if you're dumb enough to give them beer in the car, you can't blame the teenager for having a wreck. All right? And that's what the creditors did. They gave money to people they should have known would never be able to pay it back. They were stupid to give all that money to Greece in the first place. Let the Greek parasites, meaning the Greek government, file for bankruptcy and admit that if they want to rebuild the country, they'll have to do so on their own and without additional loans. Neither side wants to face the truth. Both sides want to exploit each other. To heck with both of them. Understand? The article continues. It says a swift, comprehensive deal would also pave the way for talks on debt relief. They're looking for a swift, comprehensive deal after 6 years? This has been going on. Now they want a swift, comprehensive deal? It's never going to happen. And they want debt relief, which means the Greek parasites want to write off more of the remaining debt. They've already written off at least 50% of the original debt. All right? And now they want to write, and they still want, it's not just now they want more debt relief, they've wanted it all along. They want the creditors to write off more of the debt. The creditors, of course, are refusing to write off the balance of the Greek debt and are insisting that the Greeks repay the remainder. And the article continues, which Athens hopes, and they're talking about debt relief, will restore investor confidence. Okay? The meaning government of Greece wants to restore investor confidence. Why do they want that? They want investors to think it's okay now to invest with Greece. You can send us your money and scouts on her. You can count on us to repay the debt. No, you can't. They need to restore investor confidence because they want more free money to stimulate their economy. But why restore investor confidence? So some fools will lend more money to Greece, which Greece, again, will never repay. You can bet on it. And the sentence goes on and says, and convince Greeks that their sacrifices are paying off after 6 years of austerity. Greek government, oh, we're under the break time, aren't we? Well, we'll get back to that. We'll touch on this again when we return from our break. I'm watching the clock. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back and finish talking about Greece in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Just want to finish up a couple comments on Greece. We have a caller who's been waiting quite a while. I didn't see the note, and he was there. We'll get to you in just a minute. Jerry from where? Indiana. Okay. Jerry, we'll get to you in just a moment. Just talking about Greece. And again, this is like the never-ending story. It goes on and on and on. And it's got two sides of the story, and they're both idiots. The creditors are idiots, and Greece are idiots. And we got the predators on the one hand and the parasites on the other hand, and they're locked in this deadly embrace while they do this dance trying to figure out how to exploit the other guy more than they're being exploited. And the solution to the problem is, as I've said for probably a couple of years, just let Greece file for bankruptcy. Write off the existing debt. Let Greece work its way out of its current situation without carrying the debt burden that they can't pay anyway, and to let the creditors take it as a lesson. You can't lend your money to idiots. They made a subprime loan. All right? They knew Greece couldn't repay, or they should have known. It was a subprime loan. They got stuck by the subprime borrowers, and they're complaining. The creditors enabled the subprime borrowers. They shouldn't have loaned to them in the first place, or at least not to the extent that they were involved. And the Greece, they should have been more responsible. And the whole thing is just a convention of fools trying to fool each other into giving them something for nothing. file for bankruptcy, dig yourself out of the hole, and it's a lesson for all of us. We are going to face similar problems. And there's going to be politicians and institutions that want to put the American people deeper into debt and deeper into bondage. And you need to understand that the solution, when we get to that problem, will be bankruptcy. It will not be, oh, gee, we've made our promises. Even though stupid as they may have been, we made promises. We're going to work until we fall down dead in order to try to pay off a debt that can't be repaid. Just face the truth. The debt can't be repaid. File for bankruptcy. Zero it out. It'll be painful. It won't be fun. It won't be pleasant. But once we're zeroed out, then we'll go through a difficult couple of years, and then we can start rebuilding this country again. We've got Jerry from Indiana, if he's still holding on the line. Jerry, are you there?
Hey, Al. Hey, Melody. How's it going?
Good.
Just great.
What you got for us?
I just wanted to give you a little update, what's going on here. You've got Ted Cruz running attack ads against Trump, about 5-1, I'd say. And then you've got an ad from Trump with his son that's pretty classy, really. But I just, I called to see what your input is. Do you really think that Cruz hooking up with Kasich does him justice?
I think he did. I think it looks now that it turned out to be a big mistake. Because as they pointed out in the article I was reading from, it prevented Cruz from ever going one-on-one with Trump. And he might have had a chance to defeat Trump if he'd gone one-on-one. People were concerned that Kasich was taking votes away from Trump. He was taking votes away from Cruz also. And in the end, he didn't help Trump on one level, but he did a lot of harm to Kasich, to Cruz.
Cruz, what surprised me was Cruz came in last. Kasich had better numbers than Cruz did in all the five states from last night.
Well, it looks to me like Cruz is finished, and I'm sure other people would agree.
Thing I have to hand Cruz, he did try to get one-on-one interviews and little debates with Trump, and Trump would never do it.
Mm-hmm. I don't doubt that Cruz...
And I'm not defending Cruz.
No, I understand, but I don't doubt that Cruz is slicker than Trump. I don't doubt that in one-on-one debates... Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Cruz could have made Trump look a little bit stupid. But I don't think he can make Trump look dishonest. And from my perspective, Cruz, just same, just another version of Hillary Clinton. Just in it for himself.
Yeah,
what's the opinion in Indiana, Jerry?
Well, I was just getting ready to tell you guys that I've been watching a few polls. I really don't believe in them much. One poll has got Trump 39%, Cruz at 33%. But then I look at another one that's got Trump 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's true either. I mean, how do you know? I'm just a lay person out here trying to watch all this. But... here's my take, what little of a take it is. You've got Trump blowing off every now and again, on some issues that are just point blank thrown at him, to try to catch him off guard, in my opinion. But his main core focus has not changed. Immigration, let's put a tariff on these goods coming back to America. Let's save our jobs. Let's go after China. Now he's talking about let's go after the countries that we've helped, like Saudi Arabia. And I think the people like myself, I had my mind made up a long time ago that I'm going to support Trump because he's a real outsider.
Yeah.
I want to hear your opinion on this too, but, for example, Cruz is still saying that he's non-establishment, but he's encamped himself with the Bush family now,
yeah.
Romney, and now, for, of course, I don't know anything about Carly Fiorina. He named her today as his running mate, but
Cruz
how can you be establishment, you know, and I don't know. I just wanted to get your take on it.
My take on it is he took $1 million to support his bid for the Senate back in the day from Wall Street. All right? One of the big banks, I don't remember, was Bank of America or was Jamie Dimon or who handed him the dollars.
Goldman.
He picked up $1 million, is my understanding. And then he neglected to report it on one of his, he forgot. Understand? He is a hustler. He is a dangerously ambitious man, and I've thought so from the beginning. I would vote for a lesbian Democrat probably before I would vote for Cruz. All right, and I tend to be on the conservative end of the political spectrum. I'm not fooled by the idea that he runs as a Republican. At least I don't think I'm fooled by it. Who knows? Maybe I am, but I wouldn't trust Trump. Or excuse me, I wouldn't trust Cruz no matter what happens. Trump is a, you know, he's a hand grenade. You know, he's a hand grenade in the foxhole, and then somebody's pulled the pin, and now we're trying to get the pin back in there, and I'm not sure if we're going to get it in or we're going to get it out. But Trump, again, impresses me at least trying to be honest. He's not
Absolutely. Calculating
in the sense
Absolutely.
That, you know, Cruz... Everything you ask him a question, you can see the world, the wheels turning as he's adjusting whatever it is he's going to say to avoid offending any significance. He's not telling you the truth. He's telling you what'll get him elected.
Right.
And it shows.
Well, I wanted to throw something else out here to let you guys know that the old IU coach Bobby Knight is in Trump's corner now, and. You know, whatever you think of Bobby Knight, he was a winner when he was
yep.
a coach. I don't agree with a lot of the things, you know, a lot of the controversy and all that, but he got results. I think Trump gets results. I think that pushes him over the top in here in Indiana.
Yep.
I mean, Bobby Knight to Indiana people is an icon. And, I'm going to leave you guys with that. And Melody and Al, I sure appreciate your program.
Well, we appreciate your call.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yep.
Thank you.
Forward to hearing from you again, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you.
If Bobby Knight is going to stand up and speak out for Trump, you know, he's going to carry another couple of percent of the people of Indiana are going to say, okay, if it's all right with Bobby, it's all right with me. He's not going to necessarily win the primary. That support isn't going to win it for Trump necessarily, but it's going to help win it. You know, maybe a percent. Who knows? Another percent. I'm sure I have been just hugely disappointed. I haven't seen a president since Reagan that's pleased me, and I was in favor of a couple of them when they were running for office. And I've still been aggravated, annoyed, and felt betrayed by him, particularly G.W. Bush and Barack Obama. All right? I'm going to be surprised if you can elect anybody to the White House. That won't be a little bit disappointing. All right? But I'm going to be pleased if that's all they are, is a little bit. All right? I can live with a little bit. I can't live with, oh, my God, George W. Bush. You know, he started out saying everything I thought was sensible, and yet it turned out he wasn't. That what he said and what he did, two different things. Barack Obama. I actually thought, you know, all right, let's try. Let's see, you know, let's do this. This guy is, from my perspective, just treasonous. And so is Bush. So who knows? I'm not going to be surprised if I'm disappointed by Trump, but I am still hopeful that I won't be very disappointed, and maybe that's the best we can hope for.
Well,
we're going to get
the
voting for the candidate who is the least
choices,
disappointing.
Your choices I hope the third time's the charm, Al, since your other two choices before.
I understand.
So I hope the third time's the charm. I can say that I wasn't supporting Bush or Obama, but and I didn't think much would come out of them. So third time's the charm, Al.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. You know, it's I sound cynical on the program, but I get into these things and I actually feel optimistic about these. I was optimistic about Bush. I was optimistic about Obama when he first came into office. I said, well, all right, I thought this was maybe going to be a good thing. No. This was a disaster. I have to maybe get rid of my optimism, Melody, and just say, look, I'm going to get myself a robe and one of those sandwich signs on it. The end is near. All right. It's all doom and gloom, and the whole thing is going to blow up in everybody's face. It's not the way I feel. All right. I'm actually hopeful that we can maybe work our way out of this, but
I'm always hopeful, Al. I'm always hopeful. But then there's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take a peek at reality, that kind of, you know, again, it's difficult to see where that change can support the hope, you know, when you view the reality of things.
I think
reality has to happen first. Then there could be lots of hope and so forth. And the hope is things that people can do to get ready, is to understand. That's what all these programs are about, to understand, to see what's coming, to pick apart the mistruths and to try to stay on a track and path so we can see things as they're coming our way. And that's the hope, you know, to understand the truth.
Well, I agree. We've got, you have to have some sort of hope. You have to have some sort of optimism to deal with.
I'm hoping gold's going to 3,000 and 5,000 and 10,000.
I don't doubt it'll happen. It's just a question of when.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But what do you do in the meantime? You got to hope to survive what may be some very difficult circumstances.
Plan.
And you got to prepare for it. You know, prepare, because there will be hopefully good things on the other side of what may be a very difficult time.
You don't be scared.
Therefore,
to prepare.
Yeah, you got to do best you can. Stay close to the good Lord, and you got to hope for the best, pray for the best, get prepared, get ready. And understand what's coming, and perhaps understand what might follow that if you insist. We might see some sort of a collapse where people will have a choice. Do you want to be communists? Do you want to go back to freedom? What do you want? You're going to have to understand that, to stand up at the right time and say, this is what I want. I want what this country started out to be. All right? And when this government goes down, I want the next one to look like something that we saw under Thomas Jefferson. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and we will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Jerry from Indiana. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.